Okay. So looking ahead, today I hope to talk about subspaces and connectedness. Are there any questions you have about stuff we did before spring break? I've seen several of you in my office today already. All right, let's start with new stuff. All right.
16, 8:14.
8:14
again.
Yes, it is. You guys are one day after my physics class, so to speak. Their first day of class was on a Tuesday in January. Your first day was on a Wednesday in January. So I did day 14 with them on the Thursday before spring break, so now Monday after, it's day 14 with you. And let's get this right here. So the definition of a subspace is very simple. It's a generalization of the metric subspace concept. Right? If you had a metric and you wanted to restrict it to a subset, that gives you another metric, right? Right? If you have a way of measuring distance between all reals, then that also gives you a way of measuring distance between, say, all rationals, or between all multiples of 7, right? So how do we generalize the metric subspace to the topological subspace? Well, what you want to do is take the notion that survives the loss of a concept of distance, which is the notion of being infinitely close, right? Being in the closure of a set, and just restrict it to the points you have left over. So, in other words, you would want to say that for any subset of B, I need a letter here. How about let me put subscript X on this one, and let me have subscript A on my intended subspace topology. Okay, so if I have a subset of B, and I have a point, right, I want to capture this idea of being infinitely close. So what's the correct way to capture it? Well, inside, you know, the big space, the big set X, if we have a point P that's infinitely close, so I think of that as either being on the boundary or in the interior, right? So it's infinitely close to B. We want the topology for A to think that P is infinitely close to the set B if and only if the topology for X agrees. Okay. So we're going to say that B is in the A closure if and only if it's in the X closure. Okay? That you want to preserve the concept of being infinitely close. Right? If we throw away some points, then of the points that are left over, if we have a leftover point and it's infinitely close to some set of leftover points, then the fact that we threw away some other points shouldn't change that infinite closeness, right? Which more precisely means being in the closure. Now, this is conceptually very nice, right? It does what you think a subspace topology should do. But operationally, it can be a bit clumsy in that it doesn't actually tell you explicitly what the topology is, right? Fortunately, I can spell out explicitly what the open sets are without too much more trouble, right? Just take every open set and throw away everything that's not an A. And that gives you the subspace topology. And you can check that this actually does satisfy the topology axioms. So this is actually a topology on A. And you can also check that it really is equivalent to this definition. Right? This definition really does. If you demand this for all subsets of A and all points in A, then this demand on the closures actually forces your topology to be exactly this. And conversely, if your topology is this, then you get this. The way you can tell is because if P was not in the closure of B, right? If you had your P out here, right, and there was an open set U, so open in the X topology, right, around P, but U completely avoided B, right, that's what it means to not be in the closure. It means you're in the exterior. You're in an open set that avoids B. So if you're not in the closure of B, you've got an open set like this. Okay. But if you're in A, then that means you're in U intersect A, right? So that means you're in an open set in the subspace topology that avoids B. So the subspace topology agrees that you are in the exterior of B if you're in the exterior of B according to the X topology. Conversely, if there was some set of this form, right, that P was in, then you would extend it to some U that witnessed it being of the correct form, and therefore you would conclude that if you're in the A exterior, you're also in the X exterior. Now that last part might be a little tricky. Right? So, let's see if I... How can I put it? Maybe if I put another picture here. Suppose I had P and it was over here, and then there was something around it. Okay? In the A topology that avoided B, right? Well, then there would have to be a U, or maybe a U in the... I already used U, I want to use W. There would have to be a W in the X topology such that V was equal to A intersect X, right? Because that's how I'm defining the A topology. So if I'm in the A exterior according to this definition, then... Then... That V had to come from restricting some W in the X topology to A. Ah. But now, that means that if I'm in the A exterior, then by undoing the restriction, by blowing up that V into an X open W, I'm also in the X exterior. Okay. So the way you actually want to think about this is perhaps not in terms of the closures, but in terms of the complements. right? With the complement of the closure is the exterior. Okay. Questions or comments about this? So, okay, so some consequences of the definition. The closure in the A topology of B is exactly A intersected with the closure in the X topology. And a set is closed if and only if it's equal to its own closure. Therefore, B is closed in the A topology, in the subspace topology, if and only if, well, just as sets are open by definition in the A topology, if and only if they came from restrictions of X open sets, just by taking complements, right? If you have an open set, you consider its complement, right? And extend it to the complement out here, right? The complement of U intersect A in A, right, would extend to the complement of U. And here, the complement of V in A extends to the complement of W. So we write it, we could write it as, so B is TA closed if and only if there exists a C such that C is X closed, right? And C extends B in the sense that if you just restrict to A, that is, intersect C with A, you get B. So that's just like our definition of open here. The open sets are exactly the restrictions of open sets from the original topology. So I could have written this, I could have written exactly the same thing and then just written open everywhere I wrote closed, right? Which is just another way of saying that. You just write the same line over again, put open instead of closed. Yeah. Same thing. And now, what other concepts can we dualize? Right? There's always this nice duality between closed and open sets. So, remember, we were talking about exteriors and enclosures, right? Okay. Okay, so the exterior is the complement of the closure. Okay. So how would we compute an exterior in the subspace topology? Well, we just have to take the complement of the closure. Okay. So that would be what? Let's see. So that would be the complement of this in A. Okay. So all the stuff in A that's not in here. So to say you're in A, but not in A and X closure B. Okay, well that's the same as saying you're just in A, but not in X closure B. Okay? And if you want, you could rewrite this in yet another way. You could also write it as A intersected with the exterior of B. That's quite so obvious. Anyways, I could write it as, so like take this, you could write it as A intersected with X minus the exposure of B, which is the same as A intersected with this thing, which is the X exterior of B. Okay. So closures, exteriors, just do that. Okay. Then we could ask, what about interiors? Interior in the A topology this one you need to be a little more careful about. So you think about the picture. Remember, for any set, there's the interior. That's the largest open subset. Then you have the boundary, which I believe the book abbreviates BBY. And together, these make up the closure, also written with an overline. And then the closure is the smallest closed superset. And then the leftover stuff is the exterior, the largest open set disjoint from A. Okay, but how am I going to understand the interior? Well, I would like to use the closure, but it's not quite right. I have to figure out what's the deal with the boundary. So the trick is, think about it this way. The exterior of A is the same as the interior of the complement. Maybe I shouldn't be using A, maybe I should use it. No, I'm sure it's at E. I'm using A to mean something. Any set. In any topology, right? The interior of the complement is the exterior, and likewise, the exterior of the complement is the interior, and the union of the boundary and the exterior is just the closure of the complement, and the boundary of a set is the same as the boundary of the complement. So if you flip things around, you can understand this one now. This, it would be the exterior of the complement computed in A of B. And then this, by our earlier computation, is A intersected with the exterior computed in X of A minus B. This one, think about the interior of a set in the subspace topology, is probably the trickiest of the operations. Because the interior can come out bigger than you expect. Right. So, let's give some examples here. Okay, so here's example one.
X will be R. T is the standard topology on R. Okay. And then let A be about the half open interval from 3 to 7. Okay. And then give TA the subspace topology. Okay. And then how about B go from 3 to 5? So, okay. And how about closed on both ends? Okay. Now you could do, now let's talk about this in the reals, right? We have B is closed in the standard topology. And it's exterior in the standard topology. Would be just its complement, right? Because its complement is already open. And the interior of B would be the open interval from 3 to 5, right? If you want to know, you know, say the boundary, right? Well, that's just the boundary points, right? In this example, it matches what our geometric intuition tells us, right? Now, in the A subspace topology, for the closure, just intersect this with A. Okay, so same thing. For the exterior, intersect this with A. Okay, so intersect this with this, and what are we going to get? We're going to get, well, this ray doesn't overlap with that interval. But here, from 5 to infinity, you do have an overlap. Now this is where things are more interesting. See, I'm going to need this kind of computation. All right. Now, what's the complement of B and A? So that would be the stuff, so not from 3 to 5, but from 5 to 7. Okay. Now this one I can do, right? The exterior of this would just be a, so you have an open ray on the left from negative infinity to 5. Then on the right, you'd have an open ray from 7 to infinity. Right? That's the biggest open set disjoint from the interval 5, 7. Now when you intersect, see there's no overlap between 3, 5 and 7 infinity. There is overlap here. So the interior comes out for that. So it's, see, the interior got bigger. Right? Here the interior was 3, 5, not including 3. Now it does include 3. Why the change? If we draw a picture, if we think about the whole thing X, we think about our 3 to 5, then in this situation, it's clear to us that that 3 is not in the interior, right? It's on the boundary because it gets infinitely close to stuff outside of B, as well as infinitely close to stuff in B. Right? But when you draw the picture, with A, so now it's different. 3 is not infinitely close to stuff from outside of B. 3 is distance 2 from the complement of B, in fact. It's in the interior, in the subspace topology. Now, of course, 5, in both of these topologies, 5 is on the boundary of B. Right? Because even when we restrict to A, there's still a bunch of stuff on the outside of B that gets really close to 5. So 5 is still infinitely close to the complement of B in the subspace. And, of course, since 5 is already in B, it's certainly infinitely close to B, right? It's distant 0 to itself. So you want to think of the subspace as just throwing away a bunch of points or a bunch of contexts, right? Here, when you've got the whole real line, you really do think of 3 as being on the boundary. But now you imagine a bunch of the real line disappears, and you've just got this. Now 3 is very much not on the boundary, because there's nothing else over here. It's not a boundary. Boundary is supposed to have 2 sides in our sense. Use the standard Euclidean topology on the plane. And let's consider a subspace. How about we just have the horizontal line, the x-axis? No, that's the y-axis. This is a... The x is the whole plane at second coordinate, y equals 0. Maybe I was right the first time. Yes. This is the x-axis, yes. The second coordinate is 0. The first coordinate, the x-coordinate, can be anything, okay? So x is everything, A is just a line. Give it the subspace topology. And then, how about we have a little interval, a subset of A? How about 1 to 4? We have y coordinate 0. Okay. The subspace topology, what is the closure of B? What is all the stuff infinitely close to B? You only get one more point. That end point. That's the only thing in A that's infinitely close to B. This is actually the same closure as in the bigger space. That's a coincidence that follows because A is actually closed in X. Okay. And the boundary of B in the subspace topology, what's that? Well, that's stuff that's infinitely close to stuff in B and infinitely close to stuff in A minus B. Right? So you've got some A minus B over here, some A minus B over here. So you're just going to have the endpoints 1 and 4. Right. And what about the interior? Well, that's just all the stuff that's not infinitely close to stuff outside in A, right? So you just have to, you don't want to be here or here, right? So you just want the open interval. But X sees things rather differently. Okay. The closures are the same, right? And all the stuff that's infinitely close to this line segment is on the x-axis, right? Anything off the x-axis is a positive distance to this line segment on the x-axis. Okay? So you don't get so the closure in the bigger space X isn't going to be any bigger. Okay, what about the boundary? Now things are a little more interesting. Because you've got stuff on the line that's not in B, but off the x-axis, there's a whole bunch of other stuff not in B. Right? There's lots of stuff out there below the x-axis and above the x-axis. That's not in B. Okay? So actually, any point in B is, and in fact, any point, actually any point in the plane, for that matter, is infinitely close to stuff not in B. If you consider all the points in the plane that are not in B, right, then, you know, everything is infinitely close to something not in B. Either it's infinitely close to itself, which is not in B, or it's in B. But if it's in B, right, you can get as close to as you want. You know, if you're right here, right, you can have a whole bunch of points that are off the x-axis and hence off B that get as close as you want to that point. Okay? So what is the boundary? The boundary is everything infinitely close to B and infinitely close to stuff not in B. If you have a whole plane of stuff, then everything is infinitely close to stuff not in B. So it's just a question of what is infinitely close to B. Well, that's just B closure. So we get a much bigger boundary this time. And what about the interior?
B?
Well, in the X topology, right, think about what is an open set. An open set is an actual disk, right? You can't fit any disks inside the line segment. And in terms of infinite, and another way to think about interior in the metric context is you say stuff that is a positive distance from the complement of B. But as we were just discussing, the complement of B gets infinitely close to everything. So the interior is empty. If you want to just quickly, you know, compute a little answer, I think you, if you're talking about, you know, Euclidean spaces and their subspaces, a lot of times you just use your geometric intuition. You just think about infinite closeness, you know, what is touching the set and what's not touching the set. Right? And you just have to remember that depending on whether you're in the big space or in the subspace, you know, there may be more points available to touch or not, right?
Questions or comments? Why don't I give you one to work on? Yes.
Can you see the future?
I thought I did.
Did you?
Let me check. I'm pretty sure I did. You got that. Got that. Got that. Yeah. That, the left half of this board is a little blurry, so I'll take a picture of it again. But I definitely got the first board, so don't worry. Okay.
So you could, let's see here.
So I have a set X, give it the standard topology. I have a subset, can give it the subspace topology. And then I have a subset of the subset, so I can talk about the usual operations. The interior, the exterior, the boundary. Okay. Why don't I go ahead and, as kind of an intermediate step, put B complement on here, right? So in X, that would be all the reals not in this interval. Okay? And that would be, I guess, this. Whereas in A, the complement of B is smaller, right? So there are some closures you want to there's two closures you want to compute. You want to compute the closure of B and the closure of B complement. And then if you get the two closures correct, using that, right, then you know everything else. Okay, there's one thing that's a little more annoying. That's the derived set, right? You remember the derived set was the most annoying thing to compute. That one, yeah. but these other things, you know, interiors, boundaries, exteriors, right? You can figure them all out just from knowing the closure and the closure of the complement. Right? If you think about, you know, think about it this way, right? Because the interior is the complement of the closure of the complement. Exterior is the complement of the closure. Boundary is the closure intersected with the closure of the complement. So that means that I can actually figure this all out. As long as I have an understanding of what the closures are. And for the closure, when you're thinking about subspaces of the standard topology, you just have to think of all the things that touch the set, all the things that get infinitely close to the set. And so you can. So it's not such a terrible computation to do. Okay. Fill in a few of the squares, go ahead and go up there and fill some of them up.
I'm going to see if any of this actually makes sense to you all. I need to see you do some stuff. If it doesn't make sense yet, then I shouldn't go on to connectedness yet. So, let's see if you get it. I think I agree. Yeah.
As is often the case, you want to draw a picture, right?
So here your complement is this whole thing, right? And so it's just a question of what touches B and what touches B complement.
Right? And Hong Song got it. Here's the whole closed interval from 3 to 4 touches B. And the closed rays from 3 to the left and from 4 to the right touch B complement. And then that just means, okay, and then if you just take the complement of this, you get the interior. Take the intersection of these two things, you get the boundary. Take the complement of this, you get the exterior. But you can also confirm all those visually. You can see that this interval, if you're actually inside, strictly between 3 and 4, you are not infinitely close to this other stuff outside B. And if you're at 3 or at 4, then you touch both B and B complement. And if you're at some other point, right, either you don't touch B or you don't touch B complement. And then your exterior, it's all the stuff outside of B except for 3 and 4, because 3 and 4 touch B. Okay? So now we just have to draw a picture for A. It's not that different, is it? The difference now is the point 4 has nothing to touch except the stuff to its left. Well, actually, no, never mind. There is no point 4. Forget it. I've excluded 4. There is no 4 in A. So the stuff that touches B now, well, you've got B, and also 3 touches B, but now there is no 4. And there's nothing to the right of B. So that's it. Closure of B complement. Well, you've got B complement is much smaller now, but it's all this stuff to the left of B. There's nothing to the right of B. So you've got B complement, and that's it. I mean, you go up, B complement goes up to and including 3, and there's nothing else that touches that complement because all the stuff in B is strictly to the right of 3, so it's positive distance from the complement. Okay. So in A, anybody want to tell me what the interior of B is?
Wouldn't it also be the open interval?
And what is the boundary of B? Just 3. Three touches B complement. If you look at some other point, either it's over here and it doesn't touch B complement, or it's over here and it doesn't touch B. Exterior is what? There's no 4. We're in A.
The left means from infinity to 3 open.
Yeah. All the stuff that... The only stuff that doesn't touch B is the stuff strictly to the left of 3. If you're over here at 2.9 or whatever, you have positive distance to B.
So if you're thinking about subspaces of the line or the plane or 3D space, you have the metric to help you, right? When you're talking about the standard topology, you can think about distances and touching in terms of distance zero, and visually it looks like it actually touches a set. Now, for this homework, I want you to deal with a more abstract version, right? What does touching mean now? Touching means you intersect every... Touching means every open set around your point intersects the set, right? Set, right? Or, again, remember the definition of that. That means you have to actually touch. A point is in the derived set if it touches the set of points in B other than itself. So the finite space here, you're working very directly with the definitions. Fortunately for you, if you use this, you can figure out the closures without having to actually compute the subspace topology itself. Take the closures in the big topology, intersect with your subspace, do the same thing for the complement, and then if you know the closure of your set and your complement, you can figure out all this other kind of stuff. But I want you to think a little bit harder than that when you're computing the derived set and the subspace topology. Let me start talking about connectedness. So, in the real line with standard topology, which sets are clopen? Remember, that means both closed and open. Which sets are clopen?
The empty set.
The empty set. What else?
The real numbers.
The whole line, yeah. Anything else? Are there any other clopen subsets of the real line?
No.
You think you could prove that? Anybody remember the intermediate value theorem from calculus?
If you have, if f is continuous, you have a is greater than b, and you have f of a. If you have a is greater than b, then there should be a value between f of a and there's some value c between f of a and f of b, such that for some, let's say, k and ab, there's an f of k, more or less.
More or less. For every value between f of a and f of b, So for every C between f of A and f of B, there's a K between A and B such that f of K is C. So for any C with this property, so it's between the outputs of the endpoints, or I should say between the images of the endpoints, then there exists a K that's between the inputs such that you actually hit that value, right? So you hit every intermediate value. Okay. The reason this works, I mean, what this boils down to is the fact that if you give this closed interval the subspace topology, right, it doesn't have any interesting Clopen sets, right? So we had in R with the standard topology, which sets are Clopen? About in the closed interval AB with the subspace topology. Which sets are Clopen? Just those two and no others. If you believe this, then you should believe the intermediate value theorem, right? Okay. Here's why. Let U be the union of these two open rays. Okay? This is open in the target topology, in the target space. Okay? F is continuous, so the preimage is open in AB. Actually, I want to break it up into both parts. Sorry. I need two sets. Let's call them U and V. Sorry about that. So the two rays are each open, and so their pre-images are open. That's just what continuity means, according to one of the many equivalent definitions, is that pre-images of open sets are open. Okay? Moreover, assuming that f of A is less than C is less than f of B, or f of B is less than C is less than F of A. What does that mean in terms of the preimages? Well, in the first case, we have A getting mapped to U and B getting mapped to V, right? Because A is getting mapped to something to the left of C and B is getting mapped to something to the right of C. So we either have that, or it'd be the other way around. We'd have B in U and A in V, right? Depending on which way things are ordered. Okay. But either way, you get disjoint, non-empty open sets. I forgot the pre-image thing. Now, the thing is, though, these sets are both non-empty, right? And but they're also disjoint, right? Because the stuff that maps to the ray U can't also map. You can't have anything that maps to both of these at the same time. Given an input point, the function either maps it into U or into V, but not both. Okay, so the two pre-images of the rays are non-empty, open, and disjoint. Okay, now, So we have disjoint sets. And my question, though, is, are they complements of each other? They can't be complements of each other, because if they were, then they'd be clopen. But if they were clopen, then they wouldn't. That would contradict this assumption. Okay. There's only one non-empty clopen set. This the whole set, the whole space. If these were complements of each other, then they would be clopen sets that were non-empty. Yet neither one could be the whole set, because if you were the whole interval AB, then your complement in this subspace would be empty. So they are not cloven. Okay, so they're not clopen, and use the best prepositions here. Okay. So they're not clopens, so they are not complements. Since they're non-empty and disjoint, they can't be clopen. But they're open. So if they were open sets and they were complements of each other, if you're the complement of an open set, you're closed. So they can't be complements. So we have a picture then of, it's kind of an abstract picture here. Right? You've got these two open sets, and you've got the whole interval. And they're disjoint, they're not empty, they're open, but they can't be everything. They can't be complements of each other, because then they would be complements of open sets and they'd be closed. So that means there has to be other stuff. Well, what is the other stuff? What's the stuff that's in neither of these two sets? exactly the stuff that maps to C. If you map to a real, and you don't map to the left of C, and you don't map to the right of C, you must map exactly to C. So the complement, the pre-image of singleton C is not empty. So you get the K that you wanted. Right? Obviously this K cannot be exactly A or exactly B, because A and B don't map to C. So as long as something maps to C, you know it's going to be between A and B, strictly. And this idea of not having any non-trivial Clopin sets, only having just these two Clopin sets, the empty set and the whole space, that is called connectedness. Okay? And there are many other equivalent definitions of connectedness, which we'll talk more about on Wednesday. And lots of application of connectedness. But this is the IBT right here. And you can see that in my proof here, I use nothing at all about the space A, B and its subspace topology, except that these are the only Clopin sets. I could have replaced this with some abstract topological space X. And as long as the only Clopin sets were X and the empty set, the intermediate value theorem would still be true. So the intermediate value theorem generalizes to any continuous function mapping from a connected space to the reals with the standard topology. So when you think about continuity in the more abstract sense of open sets and pre-images, then you have a very, very general abstract theorem now. Any continuous function from a connected space to the reals has the intermediate value property. If you have two output values, you have to get every output value in between. Right? So an immediate corollary of this, what if you had a countable space and you map it continuously into the reals? Well, if your countable space was somehow connected, then that would mean that if you had two output values, you'd have every output value in between. But between any two reals, there are uncountably many values. So if you had a countable connected space, the only continuous functions to the reals would be the functions that were actually constant, where there were no two output values, there was just one output value. We are surpassing 8:15 now, so as I said, we'll talk more about connectedness next time. So the connectedness is in chapter 5 of the book, right? Subspaces were chapter 4. Okay. Any questions or comments?